Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. And I think it's the 14th today of October. Very wet all last night. Not very pleasant. More rain, I suppose. The October rains are here. But you can't help feeling that this is all manipulated. And I think we know that now. Well, we've known that for several years. Yesterday we were in Suffolk. I kept saying Norfolk, but it was actually Suffolk, in a tiny little village. I can't remember the name, but at Ray's Farm, Cooper's Farm, where there was a threshing display. And, well, for the last 2 days we've been there. Threshing display with a traction engine, threshing machine, and then a demonstration of electroculture with a bunch of chaps who are doing just that on the second day. And we were up there to get some filming, saw Mark Byford, the bowler hat farmer, and yeah, it was all good. It was all good. Took little Joe. And he thoroughly enjoyed it. We stayed overnight in a beautiful barn, a converted barn, or a purposely built barn, which was very comfortable with a lovely log burning fire in the middle. And when we left, Mark very generously had said, you know, help yourself to some logs to take back for mine. So we have, and we stacked those in. We got in about 7:30 or something last night, having left Suffolk at 3-ish, 3:30. So I had to drop Julia off, so it was sort of 4 hours of travelling in the end over the Dartford crossing, through the tunnel on the way there, and over the bridge, which Joe thought was very exciting. To see us going up over the River Thames, you know, you forget what it's like for a little kid to see it for the very first time and experience these things and go, wow, I didn't know you could do this. So all in all, it was a good trip, and Julia and I enjoyed it. We enjoy these things. It's nice to be back, though, into some sort of stability. I've got interviews this afternoon. Just looking to see what else is on. I don't think I'm going anywhere for a few days. Oh yes, all week I am here, but extremely busy until next weekend, and then away again. So at least I've got a few days. Oh. But yes, it's nice to recoup a bit after a trip away. We've been doing quite a lot of trips away recently, and just wear you out a bit, and also it's not cheap. So we're the 14th, and John Ruskin in 1873 of this day in Coniston Lake in Lancashire said, smooth white satin like trunks of holly and noble birch a foot or more in diameter, exquisite in variable sunlight, rainbow staying long on the northern shore, Hevelin lovely beyond. And Richard Jefferies, which we don't hear enough from in this, in 1881 in Sussex, said, rooks and jackdaws in grass, large flock, all squatting, facing gale, and calmly feeding. Put out hand for the sunshine to fall on it, dipping in sea, crumbling earth, touching time. Yes, it's not the most lucid writing, I suppose, but you get the message of what he was up to, I suppose. And he lived in Goring nearby, not too far from me, over 130-140 years ago. So my house would have been around in the time of Richard Jefferies, and up on the downs he used to prowl and look at all the wonderful flora and fauna, I suppose, up there. And he talks in his books about the springy turf, the copious amounts of wild flowers, and the landscape as open sheep pasture. And we've seen that change in the last 130 years drastically, as monoculture farming has destroyed the natural beauty and depleted the soil of its quality and luster, which is a huge shame. But there you go. That is what they call progress. And you just say, what progress? What are we progressing to, in which you are destroying the land in the name of generating supermarket nutrient-free food, depleted vitamin food, all of this? You just wonder. Obviously, we know that there is an agenda at work. Anyway, it was good to go away and get on a farm. We felt very much in tune with the farm, and looking at those threshing machines and all that kind of stuff. Just thought it was very lovely, and we really desperate to try and find the right bit of land. But these things don't just happen. They do take a bit of time. I'm going to read to you a bit from The Farm and the Village by George Ewart Evans. This is from chapter 14, The Miller and the Millwright. Under the old farming, the mill was an essential part of the economy of the village in a corn-growing area like East Anglia, and that's where we were, in East Anglia. Most East Anglian villages had a working windmill up to the beginning of this century. Well, that would have been the last century, of course, 1900s. And many mills continue to grind corn until recent years. Very few do this now, although there are a number of mills to be seen, occasionally, even with their sails turning. Their stones rarely grind corn. Excuse me. This was published. When he says now, when is he talking about? This was published 1969. So let me see where I was. These mills have been preserved either by the Ministry of Works, Saxted Green Post Mill in Suffolk is an example, or by local effort as a kind of museum or nostalgic landmark in the countryside. From near my present home, I can see the post mill, which served the next village of Framsden for a century or so up to 1936. It stands on a hill, and the mill and its environs are a fitting reminder of the organisation of the village before the recent changes. It's being restored at the present time, in 1967, when he was writing, but Framsden had a mill before the Domesday Survey of 1086. The site of this was on low ground near the stream, as this mill was driven by water. 5 years ago, a farmer discovered in the field, a mile or so on the other side of the windmill, an object that had earlier links. It was a piece of Romano-British quern, an ancient device for grinding corn by hand. I find that fascinating. And actually, you know, it'd be quite fun to get a quern and grind your own corn. Oh, you found it.
Into my bag.
Ah, there you go. We were, as I say, in this barn, and Jojo, Julia's son, who was with us, took a toy, and there was a bit of a commotion at the end because we couldn't find it, but we found it was in a bag.
It was already packed itself.
It packed itself, exactly. So he will be thrilled. Joe was very generously given a very lovely toy tractor by Mark, yesterday as well, to play with.
It was one of his sons that he's grown out of.
Oh. So that was very kind.
It was indeed. Joe loves it.
Oh, yeah, I bet he does. And of course, he forgot it when we, well, I forgot to unpack it when we
dropped
you off and him off and initially last night. So he will have it today. And his other toy.
Yes.
Whatever that is.
Yes, a cat character.
Cat character from a cartoon show.
He loves cats.
There we go. I will just read a little bit more for you on this book. Although the principle of the watermill was known to the Romans, they do not appear to have introduced it into Britain. As far as we know, it was first used in these islands during the 8th century. By the time of the Doomsday Survey, it was once... there were between 5,000 and 6,000 watermills in England. It was once believed that the windmill was an Eastern discovery brought back here by the Crusades. But Lynn White, an American scholar, has got together evidence to show that the principle of the windmill was probably discovered independently in Europe. It is first mentioned in the 12th century documents, and it must have spread very quickly. Yet, even after setting up countless watermills and windmills, the handmill or quern continued to be used all over the country. Well, you can imagine it's a lot cheaper, more convenient if you can just do a little bit of corn to make some bread rather than having to have a whole great big field of it done in one go. The reason for this, when the manorial lord built a mill, he argued that since he'd spent so much on such a costly improvement, he was entitled to a proportionate return. Therefore, all the people in his manor must take their corn to the ground to be ground at this mill. Eventually, the lord claimed the sole right to grind corn in the district under his jurisdiction. Excuse me sneezing. In fact, he had the monopoly. He farmed his mill out to the miller and empowered him to keep back some of the villagers' corn or flour in payment for the milling. It was natural for many of the villagers to feel that they could forego the benefits of modern improvements if they were to be bought at such a cost, and they continued to grind their corn at home with their querns. To combat this, the manorial lord made the querns illegal, and whenever they were detected in any of the houses on the domains, they were seized and broken up. It is likely that, therefore, many querns have been discovered in the partial state were not broken by the plough, but by some manorial officer defending his lord's monopoly. As Mark Bloch tells us in his French Rural History, there are similar monopoly in France, and there too, as in England, this monopoly often embraced oven as well as mill. So when the peasant had paid to have his corn ground in the lord's mill, he had the further privilege of paying to have his bread baked in the seigneurial oven. Well, you can imagine that sometimes those querns were probably buried so that they were not found. And I would think that that was more likely, to be honest. But there we are. Anyway, there's a little reading from The Mill and the Millwright in The Farm and the Village by George Ewart Jones. And those books, I find, are absolute blessings because they tell you some of the history that's gone on. I think reliable history, as opposed to many of the other histories that we read from the learned men who write the stuff from the learned sources, the official sources, to give us an official narrative. And who really knows what's true and what's not true, except that the social history is easier, I think, to chase and find out what went on. That would be my thoughts. Well, it's nice to be back, although it is miserable outside, absolutely miserable, and I am very inclined to want to put the fire on and warm up the house now that I've got a few logs. Julia, alas, is home with her son to do some homeschooling. And I have a busy morning editing the videos we filmed, two videos that we filmed whilst away, another monologue, and I have two appointments to interview people this afternoon over Zoom. So it is going to be a very busy day. So despite having been away and all that travelling and being on display again and then having to go and do all the filming and what have you, there is no rest in this machine of churning out content. So, and there will be no rest because, as you can see in my diary this week, many, many interviews, and then away next weekend as well. I am looking forward. I'm starting now to look at taking at least the last 2 weeks of November off and all of December. I think that's what I should do because Julia and I desperately need to find our new home and finding a bit of land and what have you. Anyway, the diary is busy. I must crack on. Thank you for listening. Till the next one. Bye-bye.